PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
It is time once again, everyone, to go off course. I am your host, Dan Edwards. You can find me on Twitter at CanadanGolf. If you do follow me, you know I've been very busy this week talking about some of the big news popping up in the golfing world. To join me this week in discussion of some of these big conversation pieces is Josh Babbitt. You probably know him from THP Golf on Twitter, as well as at JB_THP Golf on Twitter. Joshua, welcome back. Glad to have you on again.
Appreciate being allowed to come back on.
Now, we have some big, big discussions to be had today. I know none of this will be earth-shattering for anyone who has been following along. However, there have been some very interesting storylines leading up from, let's call it, last Saturday, late afternoon, California time, when Mr. Patrick Reed took a rather unique drop, and it what was defined as a plugged ball. Did you happen to watch that video?
I did.
So, yeah, a lot of deflection on that one to another well-known player. Everyone knows him as Roars, who had a similar-esque drop on the 18th. Both were essentially told that they didn't see a bounce. Rory found his ball to be completely embedded, presumed that it took one hop and landed back into his pitch mark, and took the traditional drop that you would have there, which actually, as it turns out, was not information that was provided to him. That information didn't come to light until Monday. So in reality, he actually took a less than fair drop, as he should have been able to place it. But a lot of deflection on that from the Reed camp, who did a similar thing. However, I don't know. I watched a whole lot of stuff going on in video, a lot of prodding at the area of the ground, some feedback on social saying that he was pressing his ball into the ground. Here's the first question I have for you, Josh, and I know it's not an easy one to answer because it's pure speculation. Do you think that ball was genuinely embedded?
Personally?
Yes.
I do.
What?
Yeah.
I was the first one to call Reed out
for the bunker stuff and things like that. In this case, I believe it was embedded.
So even Reed himself, speaking of the process, said there is no way that if a ball bounces, it would embed. And I think the majority of people who watched, followed, and experienced the process that was involved, and I'm not claiming to have any sort of agronomical. Is that, that's not right. That can't be right.
No, that's not right, but move along.
Agronomy background in California golf. But here in Ohio, even when it's soupy as soup, you cannot make a ball embed jumping up from a couple feet high.
You know, I've seen it happen. It's a rare case, but in this case, I don't know. I've watched all the videos of it. I've seen everything else. I don't know. Like, I'm not saying Reed gets a bad rap because most of it he's brought on himself. I'm saying that if it was a different player, we wouldn't even be discussing it.
I think that leads into a lot of the reaction is that, when, I mean, it's smoke and mirror, right? Or I guess it's the smoking gun is what you'd say.
Yes.
As he's had some of this stuff happen in the past where he's certainly stretched the rules or, you know, like you said, bunker gate, all that stuff. Even back into his college years, there's a lot of stuff that's not necessarily been fully confirmed, but it paints a pretty heavy picture for those who can only digest from home. And then you watch back this particular video. It's my understanding that based on the new rules, which I think is absurd at this point, that they would offer something like that when doing things like defining what a fairway divot is to pull from GUR. I'm not taking that rabbit hole, not today. I can't believe they would allow players to move their ball freely like that without a rules official near them, especially not in the rough. But then the prodding, the poking, the ball being put in a different place up until the rules official shows up and then finally finds a lip. It just felt sketchy. I don't have a better word.
I would agree with you there. It felt sketchy. Now, let me ask you a question. Had this been a guy who's like a squeaky clean image, like Jordan Spieth or Ricky Fowler or one of these guys, would we even be discussing it?
I don't think we would. No, that's not true. I think golf Twitter would have a conversation about it. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I mean, if golf Twitter were around in 2013 when Tiger took his cheating drop, which he acknowledged at the Masters, golf Twitter, half of the people would have found a defense for it, but they would have exploded.
You're probably right. And it's hard for me to have an unbiased perspective because I don't give Reed the benefit of the doubt. I've seen no reason to give him the benefit of the doubt. But I will tell you this, Josh, a forum member called me on a question when we were on the forum talking about it in the Patrick Reed thread. He said, could you not suggest that if it's realistic that a ball bouncing could not embed, that Rory is also technically a cheater? And I in passing made a joke and said, but I like Rory. So that didn't say no. It basically said, look, you got me. And then the information came out on that. And I was really grateful for that because I have a perspective on Rory and it's certainly not the same that I have on Reed. So it made me feel better. Rory's openly said it made him feel a hell of a lot better because he was starting to question himself. But I still think it all comes back to when you watch what he's doing and how he's doing it. I think Schauffele said it best when he said, look, given the condition that you're in, the situation that you're in, and he probably meant to say, given the history that Reed has, there's absolutely no reason in that case not to call over the official and let him decide before prodding. That gives you your cleanest, clearest answer, doesn't it?
I would agree with you. Now, let me go back a little bit to last year, John Rahm, when he won the Nicklaus tournament.
I remember that.
And he was hacking away in the grass. And it was clear as day what he was doing, which was improving his lie for clean contact. And that's fine. Listen, I would venture a guess that most PGA Tour players have done that at least once. He got caught and penalized. And during the post interview with Amanda Baliones, he was putting on trying to earn an Academy Award with the shocked and, oh my God, I can't believe that kind of thing. He still won. But that's the second time in 2 years John Rahm's been caught for a rules thing. He had the marking of the ball issue in Europe too. We wouldn't hear this about John Rahm, and I have nothing against John Rahm other than some of his antics on the course, but
you mean tantrums?
Yeah, tantrums. Wouldn't hear this about other guys who have had multiple infractions, but I'll use an example. Had Bryson DeChambeau had a boulder moved the way Tiger Woods did in Phoenix, what would golf Twitter be saying?
Golf Twitter would be saying all that bulk and he can't move it himself.
It's crazy to me to think. Now, I'm going to offer a solution, Dan, because, that's what I'm a problem solver.
Yeah, okay. I thought your wife was a problem solver. You're the problem maker.
She is, too. We are in 2021, and every sport, game, and everything in the world has rules, and they have referees. Why in the world can we not have a judge, ref, or anything else walk with each group? It makes absolutely no sense to me. There is no reason in the world that these guys should be calling themselves for penalties. There's no reason for it.
That's an interesting point.
I'm going to add to it before I'm going to add to it.
That's fine.
Right now, the rules changed with the call-ins. You can't call in from the slow-mo thing like that. But all that did previously was penalize guys who were on TV. The guys not on TV, they could get away with bloody murder for the most part, obviously stating the obvious and overspeaking. But what I want to know is why can't that? It's the same thing issue I have with pace of play. There is no reason in the world that in 2021 we can't have a shot clock for golfers. It just doesn't make any sense. We should have a ref with each group and it eliminates all of these problems.
It's funny you say that because we're going to get into a conversation here in a little bit talking about some of this USGA and RNA overreaction to distance. And I don't want to jump the gun there, but a lot of people have taken the opportunity to compare golf to other sports as it relates to that, playing at the different levels. If we're going to compare golf to other sports, things like the shot clock, things like referees or umpires, there is no other sport that has the sort of freedom that we have in golf. And yes, we have long been deemed the gentleman's game.
What freedom, by the way?
What do you mean?
If every shot's on TV, there's no freedom.
Well, it's true, but you're still calling your own penalties. You don't have a guy looking over your shoulder. You have, you know, millions of dudes in an armchair, and I shouldn't say dudes, millions of people in an armchair watching, deciding your fate, or I guess you can't anymore. But to your point, I don't see any reason why they can't add a body there. I mean, they have, and in fact, Josh, I'm starting to get bored of all these volunteers who are placing these balls for them. I think that's one of the silliest things out there. If we get, as amateurs, get 3 minutes to look for our ball, why in the world are they getting help on tour to look for their ball? Take two of those guys off and replace them with one guy who operates as a rules official for each group. And I think you solve a lot of problems, right?
Of course you do. I used to make the case that make the opposing person, meaning in the twosome, the opposing person's caddy be the rules judge for the other person. And I've learned two things. Number one, the distance between drives of those guys aren't necessarily the same. It would be hard to do. Number two, those guys don't really know the rules necessarily.
Yeah.
Now, I'm pretty sure a lot of PGA Tour players don't know the rules.
We watched that a lot last weekend after Dropgate, didn't we? Sunday, everyone, like Victor Hovland, hanging out behind the green trying to figure out where the heck he's supposed to put his golf ball. I mean, this is a good example of how few of those guys can understand the complexities that is the USGA rule book.
Yeah, and I think that's the perfect segue to your next topic.
Oh, well, I can't say it any better than Rory did yesterday. That's for damn sure.
Would you like to read his quote?
No, I don't actually have it in front of me, but I have... You kind of stuck me because I wasn't really done on read, but we can come back to that if you want to. We can focus on the absurdity that I'm going to call it of what the USGA and RNA are trying to do right now. I have been long outspoken about how much I dislike the distance report that they came out with, or the distance insights report that they came out with. I think it's incredibly short-sighted to review this only at the tour levels. And in fact, I made a comment on Twitter the other day with the accessibility that golf has to shot tracking data, and I cited Arcos as a great example because they've been kind of one of the pioneers of it. For the USGA not to reach out to them and get just basic information on distance traveled for amateur golfers and only cite tour statistics and then bring that to golf as a whole is appalling to me. I think as a governing body, and the way that Mike Davis talks is impossibly aggravating to me, to claim that the integrity of the game is being challenged because of the distances they're reviewing as unrefutable evidence and not utilizing the entirety of the golfing stratosphere is insane. And Rory said it best yesterday. He said they are looking at this through a tiny lens. They are wasting money and wasting time, and that money could be better served to support the game in other ways. Josh, I also saw a number of people on Twitter comment about, hey, golf is in the best place it's been in maybe ever after 2020. It's the one sport that didn't get damaged by what we're dealing with globally. And somehow they take this opportunity to tell golfers, hey, you're just learning how to play the game. You're hitting the ball too far. We're going to nerf you, as they say in gaming. We're going to put a governor on your capacity to hit the ball a certain distance or a certain amount of accuracy purely because of the tour. I'm done ranting. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. And like you, I strongly disagree with it from the global landscape. I will point out one thing, though. let's say for argument's sake that we have a distance problem on tour, and I don't think either one of us necessarily believes that, but let's just say for the argument's sake that they hit the ball too far, right? It's not just the tour players. It's not the amateurs either, but it is high-level college golfers, mini tours, top amateurs. The ball is traveling further. So with that said, the biggest challenge in my mind is where do you draw the line? Are we at the point of bifurcation is the only way to go, which I believe is the case? Or are we at the point where they have to, as you said, put a governor on everything because they've done it repeatedly and it's always reactive. They did it with the wedge grooves. They did it with the putters. Every time something has success on tour that might be helping amateurs enjoy the game a little more, they react. This one is a real issue, though, because every statistic out there through these sites and companies like Arcos and ShotScope and every other one says we are not hitting the ball too far and that golf courses haven't necessarily had to get longer. If you take a place like the state of Florida with more golf courses than every place, I believe, and more golfers than every place, they're definitely not hitting the ball too far. Now, through that narrow lens of looking at top amateurs and professionals, yeah, you could make the case that length is an issue, but stop with the idea that we can't lengthen courses anymore because we've already done that. We saw what happened when they had a near 8,000-yard course or an 8,000-yard course, and it got destroyed in a major. It is not about lengthening a course. It's about course conditions and course mapping. And I'm not necessarily in the camp I used to be of just roll back the mower and stop giving these guys 50 yards a roll, because I think at that point it would become target practice and they'd tee off with a 5-iron and go slay these courses to death like they do at places like the John Deere and others. But some convenient mapping and maybe some creativity and not playing the same 20 courses every year would solve all of this.
So you make a good point, and I think there are a number of players, especially at the elite level, who've had success, who are making very selective choices as to where they're playing now. I looked at examples where, because I thought Webb Simpson made a good comment about it, and he's far from the longest out there. So I would argue that if distance comes in and it's a percentage of, I think he would be one of the guys who would genuinely benefit from it. He was not for it at all. And his reasoning was they need to do better at course design, the structure, the layout. And then when you take that to tour, people say, oh, more dog legs. And they use an example of Bubba taking it basically backwards overseas, or Sergio last week taking an obscene line on a dog leg. Or I remember you mentioned Muirfield once already, the wind at their back, they were carrying the ball, you know, three whatever, hard right over a bunker that's way out there, blah, 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 on a dog leg. But conditionally speaking, if you put those tee boxes in the proper place, that can't exist. If you put something there to obstruct, it will not exist. If you slide the tee box over to where you're basically hooked from the tee to go over the dog leg, then you have to start shaping your shots rather than just carrying it over. And it forces these guys. There are courses out there do a wonderful job. Someone mentioned Harbortown. I think when you get inside that course, yeah, I think it's challenging for the long hitters to manipulate those courses.
That's why they don't play there.
Right. That's why a guy like Matt Kuchar had big success there. There's a course, and I can't remember which one it was, that was in Mexico. Every single tee shot was a shape. And not only was it spectacularly entertaining to watch, it challenged the golfers to use every bit of their imagination to be successful. I think that is our problem right now, is distance is not a safeguard to distance. I think creativity is a safeguard to distance.
I would agree with you. And you mentioned something about course designers, and some of them have been extremely vocal, like Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson previously, where they talk about, well, we can't build them. Well, I know it's not fashionable or even acceptable in a lot of ways to be critical of Jack Nicklaus, unless he's making a political statement, in which case you can say anything you want, apparently, on golf Twitter. But he could have easily drawn a line in the sand and said, I'm not building a longer golf course. He didn't. Instead, he did it for money. That's his job and his company, and designed stuff across the board. My course that I played in Florida down at Hammock Beach is a Jack Nicklaus design. And the sister course, the other one on property, is a Tom Watson design that's the longest in the state of Florida. You know, it nearly 7,900 yards and a slope of 160. So I don't want to hear. And listen, they do the NCAA Big Ten Championship there, and the guys barely shoot par. So I don't want to hear that it's just a distance thing. But there is some creativity, and you can make courses challenging. With that said, this, we can't bifurcate the rules. Why? They're already playing a different game.
Yeah. Well, I remember, Josh, it wasn't 10 years ago where all the guys on tour were playing 430 or less CC drivers, and we hadn't quite gotten to that low spin logic. And I watched last week, and maybe it's a problem of twofold. I'm not saying if they shrink it down to 430, it guarantees the guy's going to be a less accurate. But Rory, who's one of the best ball strikers on tour with a driver in his hands, hit like 43% of the fairways. It was very much in contention all the way up until Sunday. And that's kind of problematic. I mean, I watched Jason Day with, I think he was using the Ping G425. He hit every drive.
Cover your ears.
On the first 2 days, he hit and like shrugged or shook his head. He was not happy, but he was never in serious, scary trouble off the tee, which is insane to me at a tour. I know people love Torrey. I get that. It's an interesting two tracks, but it's just not punishing enough for tour players when they're not accurate. Like, that's crazy to me that you can be that inaccurate and still be relevant in a tournament.
Well, and that goes back to the money is so big now, the guys pick and choose where they're going to go. A very easy solution to that, again, would be the PGA Tour mandating that players have to play each tour stop every 3 years.
I love that. So
they'd have to play all these other courses, and we'd see how they do. The selective schedule started with Tiger years ago when the money became big. And listen, good on him for choosing where his game best suited. That makes perfect sense. It's the reason he didn't always go to a place like Innisbrook, or back then the Honda Classic and PGA National was kind of taboo because of where it was on the schedule. And that's changed since it became a home game for a lot of these guys. But, you know, there's something to be said for something a little more punishing. Now, the guys in R&D and the engineers would figure out a 430 pretty darn quickly.
So, what about a 400? You know, that's... Is 430 enough to make this challenging for tour players?
No, it's not. And I'm not sure, like, they're talking about messing with length again. I'm not sure even something more punishing would be there. These guys and the engineers at these companies are so good. There's a reason guys like Rory and Bryson can swing as hard as they can now and hit a ball, because if they miss it half an inch to the toe or heel side, it's still dead straight.
Mm-hmm.
These guys also learned in the last couple of years, they don't have to go crazy low spin to get the distance, and they get a little more control. The golf ball is incredible nowadays. There's a lot of things that can be done. I mean, if they wanted to do it and change things dramatically, you could do something with either the golf ball or the driver. I'm not sure that's the best solution. I would say that the easiest solution for all parties would be to limit the driver head size.
Interesting.
You go to 400, you go to maybe 385, and all of a sudden the it's a little more punishing. With that said, they would just pick up a 3-wood with more loft and just bomb it down the fairway.
Yeah,
they
do it. You have your Frankenwoods. But I did find it fascinating that it was a tour encouragement to go to that 450, 460 head, which I personally didn't like. I much prefer the compactness of the 430 back when I hit driver relatively well.
I'm going to say something controversial real fast about that.
I dare you.
The CC size has nothing to do with it from the amateur perspective, too. It's really about shaping.
Right.
you know, you can make a 460 driver look smaller and you can make a 430 driver look larger based on depth, based on shaping and everything else. So that part comes into play as well.
Did you find it funny that on the list of the insights report that came out recently at the very, very bottom, almost like they put it in late, was that they were going to start reviewing limitations on the radius of gyration? Shout out to our guys over at Cobra.
Yeah, that, you know, that was definitely one that I didn't actually expect, but
so reactionary, man. I can't get over that. It like almost like at the 23rd hour, they said, we got to throw that on there, man. They're doing something.
Yeah, it's so reactionary. But going back to the entire debate that we were having is, let's assume that they are having an issue on tour. I'm not saying they are, but let's just say that that's the case. What about the other millions and millions and millions of golfers that don't have a distance issue? They're going to be punished. And do you think these guys are immediately going to move up a tee box, or courses are all of a sudden going to sell off a portion of land and redesign to make them shorter? No.
I can tell you they don't do that now.
It's not going to happen.
Fastest equipment out there. And I said that. I challenge people who have any sort of support on it. I challenge people to say, look around at your local clubs, look who you play with, and tell me if you know more than 1% of people, and I'd be even comfortable saying a fraction of a percent of people, who can outplay the majority of the courses in your area. And that's where I think the real challenge comes, is if you can find and justify that, then great. I have no problems being altered in perspective if given the proper data. I just think it's so short-sighted. And like Rory said, and I want to follow up with this because I think Rory hit the nail on the head. Do you think that his voice, obviously reactionary on social, was very positive and supportive of him? Do you think guys like Rory coming out and saying, look, you guys are focusing on the wrong things, it's not good, smarten up, do better, do you think that's good for the game or bad?
Both. I think it would be foolish not to know that Rory McIlroy would be one of the guys hampered by losing distance. That's the best part of his game, especially currently when he's struggling with the putter. But I also think he's 100% right. It is narrow-minded. It is missing the big picture. So either the USGA and RNA needs to say, you know what, you guys are right. We are not thinking about the game of golf as a whole. We're thinking about tour players and elite amateurs, or we need to have a separate rule book. And I don't see a problem with a separate rule book as long as it's done appropriately, whether it's through equipment, which I would struggle with personally, or through the game or through the ball, whatever it is. I don't think they need to change the ball. I hate the idea of stifling innovation. I hate it.
So let's take this another step in the perspective of the regular average golfer. We had a huge boom last year in golf between purchasing, playing, whatever you want to call it, whether that's repeat golfers or whether that's new golfers. I don't have that information. I'm assuming there's a lot of new players out there. How does this look for the game a year after someone starts, that a governing body would want to do something so reactionary? Do you think that impacts the game negatively from that perspective?
I don't know. I don't know if somebody's starting out, I don't know how close they're paying attention to it.
Yeah, that's something I'm really concerned about. And I think people have brought up great points that the last thing we want golf to feel right now is stuffy. The last thing we want is a lack of inclusion, a lack of, I will call it compassion, because golf is friggin' hard. Anyone who's played this game and attempted to play it well understands that there's no magic, there's no genie you can just go out and grant, you know, even par or even breaking 80. There's a reason why USGA tracked players less than 15% can even break 80 in their best 6 of 10 or 20. That's really hard for me to look at this from a perspective of, you're trying to grow the game. I think they're trying to damage the game. And I just can't shake that, man. I cannot shake how out of touch guys like Mike Davis are.
Well, I would agree with that. You know, they did something really good previously when they kind of streamlined the rules.
I love that.
And it showed me like this organization, maybe they're coming around. Maybe they understand that the golfers of the world and the game that we love and that we want to see grow and stay at this high level is not just tour players. And then this, and it all started really boiling over when Bryson won the US Open. Yeah. How dare he?
Yeah, that's funny. And I love that you commented on the rules because I was one of the first ones to credit them for making the game of golf more enjoyable for the average golfer, as opposed to focusing on the good golfer. And I, as part of the committees and the advisory board at my club, was a heavy proponent, despite being one of the lower caps at the club, was a heavy proponent of incorporating these rules, which would greatly benefit the higher handicaps. I was very excited to do that because golf should be fun. If it's not fun, it's not the thing I want to do.
Well, and you kind of touched on it, which is it's about the game overall, not just about one segment of golfers. And what they did with this rule change was try to make it easier for everybody to understand so they can play by the rules. I don't know why I emphasized can. That was very strange. But now what they're doing is saying, well, you know, for everybody who picks it up and wants to try, I'm sorry, we're going to make the game a little more challenging for you because there's some people who hit it too far. Maybe there is. Maybe we have gotten too long. But you can't just shove the cap on the bottle and say, that's it. Now, I would say they could put a cap on things.
They should. Speed-wise. I have no problem with that.
Cap. You know, you cap the speed right now, and there you go. But I have no problem with the tighter CT tolerance. I think companies are smart and can deal with that. I have no problem with a lot of these aspects. I struggle with the aspect of golfers are hitting it too far as a blanket statement. Let's move on. It doesn't make any sense.
The word is ignorant, Josh. It is ignorant. And
have
it's
you
upset.
Noticed something with USGA and this? I'll call it a debate, but I've yet to see an argument for it that makes any sense that's not misinformed. There's a lot of misinformed information out there. But have you noticed there's like two camps. The USGA can do no wrong. You don't understand. They're trying to grow everything. Or they do nothing right. And yet we just gave them a compliment on the rules. And it's very confusing to me. Some of these arguments I'm reading on social media and on the forum about the distance thing, it's filled with misinformation about the equipment side of it. I mean, it's flat out wrong.
It's bad. And I struggle with the idea that we can't have a strong, decent, reasonable debate over something that a governing body does.
Have you followed the world the last 4 years?
I know there are people out there, and I've gotten it already, hey Adam, to say, just trust the process. That's not my way. There are certain things in my life that don't impact me at all that I'm fine with just saying, you know what, whatever, I can't do anything about it. In this case, the louder we are, the more impact we have. And I would love nothing more than to see something like this. And someone made a good point as well. They said they don't have competition. I want someone else to come out, start their own damn rule book, and bring out the Premier Golf League and call it the XGL. And it's suddenly, you know, the hottest thing ever. Everyone's playing the XGL rules. Like, let's get it.
The whole trust the process, it'll be okay thing, while kind of a joke you just made, these are the same people who argue about everything over the last 5 years on social media. If it was cloudy that day, that somebody was trying to wrong them.
If it was cloudy that day, you'd be reminding me that I lived in Ohio. Come on.
You know, the whole trust the process. Trust what? They screwed up the wedge rule. They screwed up the putter rule. They got the rule book right. What are we trusting? That they've been talking about distance for a decade, and now all of a sudden they're going to do something about it, and it's going to be right?
I love the wedge rule.
It doesn't make any sense.
It helped me so much as a high spin guy. Oh my goodness.
And I guarantee you, I'm going to make a prediction that's going to alienate people and have them stop listening to the show. Most of the people who agree with the distance debate carry a Sunday bag or at least own one. Guaranteed.
Oh, you didn't do that. Listen, Off Course supports you playing golf in any way you want to, folks. Please make sure to like and comment. Once again, that's JB_THP Golf.
Send your hate mail my way.
Speaking
of hate mail, I'm going to go on a huge segue to you, even though you're normally the one that does it.
Because I got something for you, but go ahead.
I have a feeling it's the same topic.
Oh, boy.
why is there such thing as a hamburger when a cheeseburger exists?
Yeah, we talked about this the other day a little bit. So my wife, God bless her, she's a wonderful human being. She has decided to start enjoying the process of cooking a bit more, which to me is great. I mean, why not? So she likes to do hamburgs or cheeseburgs now. Okay.
There, you know that there's another ER at the end of that.
Cheeseburgers?
Yes.
Yeah, I was trying to speed it up because we're already at 35 minutes, but yeah, you ruined that. So thanks a lot. Anyways, so we got this Ninja air fryer. So we do our own fries. It's pretty good. Good experience, at home stuff. And she asked me, and I realized this was such a Josh thing. She goes, do you want cheese on yours? And I'm like, I know of a guy who believes there's only one right answer to this. And I guarantee it's you.
Well, what's funny is I'm not normally the one right answer with food. Like somebody wants to put ketchup on a hot dog, they're allowed to. You know, in Chicago, you'll get shot for that.
How about ranch on
calzone? Ranch on a calzone's wrong. But I don't understand why a hamburger exists. I have this conversation with my wife. She gets a hamburger. What? The cheese is there to make it better.
So is there a certain amount of cheese you're comfortable with? Because you used to get pretty mad at me for getting one slice as opposed to two.
No, and that's if two are available, you get two slices. No, there's not a right amount. You're okay with one slice, but if there's two burger patties, you should have two slices.
He's putting on a show here, folks. And I think that's part of what our friendship stemmed from was the McDouble v. Double cheeseburger debate, the great debate of 2015.
Well, yeah, because you got a McDouble. I was buying when a double cheeseburger is on the menu and they're the exact same thing with a separate piece of cheese.
Dude, those things used to be like a dollar and it was the most amazing thing ever. Now I go get a medium fry and a McDouble and it's like $6. I'm like, where am I, Canada? Wait, was that a cell phone?
I think so. But no, why does a hamburger exist?
I say, why not? Okay, here's an example. You go to a restaurant, let's say Red Robin, and you don't order clucks and fries. So you go to Red Robin, you actually order a hamburger or a cheeseburger, but they have all the varieties. Do all those burgers, all the unique burgers there require cheese to be enjoyed?
To be enjoyed, no. Does the cheese make it better? Yes.
Okay, next question. Ketchup or barbecue sauce on a cheeseburger?
Ketchup. They're both good, but ketchup.
Really?
Yeah.
No ifs, ands, or buts?
No, they're both good, and they both have their place depending on what's there, but
cheeseburger with onion straws. Cheeseburger with onion straws in it. Ketchup or barbecue?
Depends how the onion straws are done, but generally ketchup.
Is it bad, folks, that he has a harder time answering these questions than the ones I ask him about golf? we're falling apart here and I love it. I really want to jump back to Reed a little bit since I think we've obviously everyone's going to go have a cheeseburger tonight for dinner now and not a hamburger. But one of the things that came out of the weekend was a kind of double tweet, one from the Patrick Reed account and then not long thereafter, one from an account that not many people knew about. I think it was called Use Golf Facts. You familiar?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
As is like 15,000 other people now, as I saw the follower count jump aggressively since Sunday. So this is an account that basically puts Patrick Reed on a pedestal in every opportunity they can. An account that has aggressively flamed guys like Xander Schauffele and the CT of his driver head. Guys like JT, and I think I genuinely think the account very, very much dislikes JT based on some of the potentially cancelable commentary that's come from that. What do you think there, man?
The rumor has it that it's a family member / wife that account is, you know, believe that what you make, but they haven't necessarily been wrong about Justin Thomas. I just want to point that out. But, you know, Justin Thomas is a really unique situation because right now, obviously, not the most popular guy to discuss in a positive light. He seems to have something come up every single year. Now, this account seems to make sure they call that out every chance they get. I don't know what to make of it. Twitter has become a cesspool.
You know, I think if you find the right avenue to go down, and I've certainly experienced that this year, it took me a while, but I'm starting to enjoy Twitter a lot more. A lot of great opinions on there, a lot of great people on there, expanding my, we'll call it golf-verse, my golf-verse, or whatever you want to say. I've really struggled with the idea that someone on the tour or someone close to the tour. Now, Reed, I think his lawyer came out and said, strategically said that it is not the same person on that account that runs the Patrick Reed Twitter, which is about as muddy of the water as you can get.
Correct.
And then you got Rory on his incredible press conference yesterday saying, what did you think about what Patrick said about you? And his comment was effectively, oh, I don't think it was Patrick, his wife maybe. So I know the guys are out there talking about it. There's suggestions that Shoffley reached out to Reed, and Shoffley was very critical of him and his drop. That's got to be an ugly situation to be in, not only from, let's say, a Ryder Cup teammate perspective, but you get in the same group as this guy, and touching him is like touching lava at this point.
I think that Twitter is a microcosm of what's going on, but also amplified to a 50. To me, the guys would play fine with him. They'd be fine, but there's obviously some issues there, and I don't think Reed cares. I'll be honest and say, I can guarantee you it's not the only burner account that's out there. I can guarantee it and state with fact that there are a few other PGA Tour pros that have somebody I'm doing finger quotes like they can see that somebody else on tour has these other accounts through a family member or agent to say certain things. So I don't know. I don't put a lot of stock into it, but it's certainly unique because that one's getting a lot of attention right now.
Oh yeah. Everyone who's got a podcast has asked him to get on, or I suppose asked her, whatever you want to call the account. I haven't yet. I should try. Maybe I'll break through that wall. What do you think?
They would definitely have a hot take on cheeseburger versus hamburger.
Yeah, I'll bet they would. I think it's certainly made it more entertaining, but I don't like the idea that guys are going out there, and I've never been a behind the back kind of guy. It has always bothered me. So why not just, if you are going to leave that account up, if you're going to leave that perspective up and it's kind of out there now, just say how you feel. Just get it over with. You could be the Vijay Singh of this era, whatever you want to do. I mean, it's already there, right? Why not?
I would agree with you. The saddest part of this entire thing is the guy is seriously talented on the golf course.
Yes, and that's the truth.
He's going to win another major. He's going to win a lot more tournaments, and this type of thing will either hold him back, amplify him, make him get booed, whatever it is, but it's going to happen. It is kind of funny sitting back and watching who people root for and why, and the defense mechanisms that come out for some players and don't for others.
Do you think Patrick Reed can recover from this? Can he recreate his image over the next 10 years?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if it depends, because people have a very unique situation as far as what they defend and what they don't. Guy behind a vehicle on drugs or committing a crime or whatever it is, pass. He probably took an Ambien.
That was after all those tournaments he won.
Yeah, if guy may have broken the rules, crucify him. And listen, I'm not necessarily against that idea either. I just think the label should be evenly given, and it's not. I think Nike said it best. I can't believe I even muttered those words, but winning cures all. He goes on a run that he's certainly capable of. Winning will cure all.
Interesting. I'd love to see it. I've always said I want to see a dominant player come back out. It's been fun to see these little bits of brilliance from these guys. Brooks is a great example. DJ's a great example. I want to see one guy just show up and just dominate for a long period of time.
The money is so good right now, it would be hard to do because there's so much talent out there. The depth is so much deeper than it was during Tiger's era or Jack's era. The 150th ranked guy can win any given week.
True. That's true. Golf's in a great place for that. There's
It really is. Now, here's a question I'm going to ask you, and you know, it's kind of convoluted, but at the same time, it's not, it makes a little bit of sense. We are at a spot right now where a guy can win any single week. Is that good for viewership or bad for viewership?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it depends on the guy. If you have a great story, like Tony Finau, for example, not to say he's down and out, but if you were to come out and win next week, it would be a huge story. If you have a guy like, top of the leaderboard right now at -8 is a guy I'm not particularly familiar with, Nemeth. I think that's it. And would he impact me? Probably not. But I like the diversity out there of the winning circle. I think Neesmith is his name. Sorry. I think it's either one of three things for me that would work really well. One guy smashing it, a bunch of guys up and comers giving hope for the game, or a select few guys who are well known and popular come out and just purely dominate.
That's a fair answer. I'll ask another question as a follow-up, and then I'm pretty sure we're at this point rambling. If we switched, or if the PGA Tour switched and had a rule of one every three, meaning you have to play every one of these events every 3 years, would there be any sort of dominance?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know what it's been like. Has it been that bad?
Yeah. I mean, there are guys who just never play some of these courses because they don't fit their game, and that makes their ranking possibly suffer. If they couldn't just pick and choose the same courses every single year, we might see something else happen. Now, we may not, but I don't know. It feels to me like it's the perfect opportunity to do a shuffle of the schedule with this wraparound nonsense and everything else, that we should have people playing every single event.
I don't see why we wouldn't, based on the fact that guys like Adam Scott have come out and basically said there's only 12 relevant tournaments, which I think is a disgusting perspective. A lot of that has been brought on by this ability to be selective. It's not like, and I remember back when LeBron was playing in Cleveland, they were resting him for no good reason other than to rest him during regular season games on the road. And I think that's really bad for the game when you can't showcase the highest talent in the league in other barns. I think that's not fair for those locations. And I feel the same way about golf. You need to give the skill and opportunity to be showcased everywhere you go. And if you're not doing that, then you're doing something wrong.
And you know, that's one of those things that's changed in recent years. Back in the days of the 80s and stuff like that, guys didn't want to sit out because they didn't want to ever lose a game. Mm-hmm. Now I understand it. They're independent contractors. They can come and go as they please. And listen, if they made that rule, all of a sudden we would have the thing of, oh, I got a sore hamstring, I can't play. My spleen is injured, I can't play. So it would come out. But there is no doubt that the game would be in a better spot if these guys played in all these tournaments. And I don't mean they have to play every single week. You stagger your schedule for 3 years and you set it up that way. So you're still playing your 25 tournaments a year, 20 tournaments a year, but they're staggered and be a different place. So the John Deere gets some, the whatever it's called, the Valspar gets some, and so on and so forth. So I think that would be a benefit. And it's been a personal mission of mine to make happen that'll never happen. But I don't know. I think that we would see a different golfer at the top of the leaderboard if that were the case.
I know we got a couple other things we want to touch on, but we're running short on time, Josh. Maybe we'll have you back on in a couple weeks. We can talk a little bit more about some of the things we haven't got to yet, if you're cool with that.
Absolutely. You have a much better guest than me coming on next week.
Yeah, I can't wait. And I'm not going to spoil it just yet. We still got to record, so make sure everything's on the up and up. I'll put that up on social before we go live and make sure you guys get a chance to ask any questions you want. Josh, even though you did just ask me two questions, my favorite part of the episode when you get to ask me anything you want. Do you have anything for me?
I have two questions for you.
Are they good ones?
Probably not.
Fire away. First
is your course is a private course in Cincinnati-ish. Mm-hmm. They allow walking and they allow riding. Do they allow push carts? And if not, why not?
I hate you. I'm going to put my course on blast. I know some of the guys out there listen and they'll probably have a good chuckle at this. I've been on the advisory board there for a number of years, been in a number of committees. Always felt like the opportunity to put the player first was very much a thing there. And over the last year with the Rona and all that, I was actually only able to play 57 tracked rounds, and I probably only walked maybe 25 of them, maybe. And I've been pushing for the last half decade to get rid of this tired and absurd old rule that you couldn't bring your own push cart to the golf course. I think it's physically a very positive thing, but they are determined to continue to charge people to rent the push carts there. The Sun Mountain, not bad products, but they're someone else's products. And you know how I am with that. So at this point, no changes are going to be made. Obviously, they are a for-profit, whatever you want to call it. And I'm salty about it. I'm genuinely salty about it. I think it is as pleady as the USGA is right now.
My second question is, you make a lot of comments about Ohio and the weather and things like that. You're a grown man. Why don't you do something about it?
My wife has a good job.
She can get a good job elsewhere.
It's true. You know what? I don't want to say I'm rooted here, Josh.
She's a talented instructor.
She is spectacular in just about every way, and it's a shame she probably doesn't listen to these because she'd laugh at me if she heard me say that.
That's why I asked the question, because I know she's not going to hear it.
I would love to move, and there's about 100 reasons why. I'm certainly not anchored here in Ohio. We have family, some family here spread out throughout the state. I got some family up in Ontario still, but there's white stuff on the ground outside right now, and that it hurts my heart a bit, man. I don't like, I mean, I'm past my mid 30s. Every day counts at this point in my life as a good golfing day.
Well, I'm much older than that. Much, much, much older. But
and you moved north.
I did, but I still have good weather.
True. I hate you for asking both those questions. I want you to know that.
Well, I'm here to help. And next week you'll have a much better guest and, you know, they'll be able to do something more enjoyable for the listener.
You know, I had a blast talking today. I've been dying to get some of this off my chest all week long. It's been a lot of fun talking about it on social. And if you folks out there aren't following me already at Canadan Golf, oftentimes, if I see something I want to talk about, I'll talk about it. And I love different perspectives, especially when you carry the conversation and don't just bail on it. So,
it'll be okay, man.
Josh, once again, man, thanks so much for being a part of it this week. I know I kind of jumped at you late with the idea of getting on, and I know that these types of things, based on the fact that you're a part of a Hacker's Paradise community, you feel the same way I do, is that everyone should enjoy this game to the max, and we should not isolate it to the individual at the top.
I agree with you, and thanks for having me on.
Glad to. Hey, if you guys are out there playing this weekend, please have fun, enjoy it, and let me know how you played on social. Until next week, see you later.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.